Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Na, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur einen Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
My birthday is coming up soon.
That's so true. Oh, wait. This is not your birthday episode. I've actually been thinking about this. It's not. Mm-hmm. We got one more. Well, happy almost birthday.
Thanks. 26. I'm off my parents' insurance.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, exciting. Welcome. But now you can rent a car. Something you've always wanted to do. Something you frankly never shut up about.
Honestly, you know me. I'm like, God, if I could only rent a car.
We're always like, should we go get dinner? And you're like, yeah, let me rent a car real quick. Ugh, I can't.
I always thought you had to be 25 to rent a car.
Hear me out. That might be true. I've never rented a car.
Welcome to Recovering Gleek, a podcast for all of your complicated feelings about the TV show Glee.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Beatles tribute part two. So nice they did it twice. Tina in the Sky with wow. Diamonds. My name is Ian Allred, and I'm a Gleek.
My name is Lena Knatzer, and I'm a Gleek. How are you, Ian?
I'm pretty good. This is my last week going to Alaska, which is honestly sad.
I'm gutted. I loved your Alaska clips.
In some ways, I'm ready to move on, because some of these places I have been like 7 times, and I'm kind of like, what else is there for me to do here? But then other parts of the, I don't know, there was some cities I've like barely been to because of rehearsal stuff, and also just Alaska is beautiful and it will be sad to leave it. So
yeah,
farewell Alaska. I don't know, Alaska.
I always think about going on a cruise and I'm like, I don't even know, even when I go on cruises, I'm like, I don't know that I'll get off. I just like sitting on the boat. You know what I mean? And I'm nervous if I was especially working on a cruise, I would just like never leave the boat.
I don't know if that's better than you, because I have this fun thing where when I get off the boat, I'm not actually enjoying it, because I have this mentality of, when am I ever going to be back here? I have to do absolutely everything I possibly can. Mm-hmm. So like, for example, I took a hike in Juneau 1 week, and the hike kept branching mm-hmm. off into different paths, and I kept thinking, well, I have to go up this path and go all the way to the end and then come back to the main path and then keep going on the main path and then take the next branching off path, because I was like, I have to do every single one of these hikes, because when am I ever going to be here again? And I have to literally focus my brain on, no, we're just going to do what we're doing right now and let go of everything else. So, yeah. Two opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, definitely. I'm like, I'd rather just sit on the boat and look at it. And I'm not a traveler girl, and I didn't grow up traveling. So I feel like sometimes I'm like, I don't really know. I don't have the tools to do stuff. But you know what I do with the tools to do? Sit on the Lido deck and read my books.
Well, how are you?
I'm good, though, other than my tonsil stones. I don't know that they're tonsil stones. My tonsils are stones. Sorry, I keep gagging.
I'm so sorry. That sounds terrible.
Let's talk about the, what'd you call them? The get backs.
Oh, yeah, it's time for the glacks.
Let me hit you with some Gleedles facts. Let's talk about the 4 years. Let's start with 1966 through 1970, the studio years. So, big recap. We're talking about the Beatles. John, Paul, George, Ringo, you heard them.
I haven't.
No, you have. That's a lie. Sorry to not yes and you. Yeah, you've never heard of them. You did such a great job last week of telling us about the Beatles' early years.
Thank you.
So I'm excited to keep on talking about them. So as Ian said last time, the Beatles were like touring. It's too loud. No one can hear us. Technology is not far enough to like handle these studios and handle like 55,000 people. It's not worth it. I went to a 55,000 people concert the other day, the Lady Gaga concert. It was the most intense experience of my life. And I could not even imagine if I couldn't hear the music. That sounds like ass. And they were like, this is so boring. We're not doing this ever again. So they are now freed from the burden of touring. The Beatles have embraced their an increased experimental approach as they record Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band beginning November 1966. According to engineer Geoff Emerick, the album's recording took over 700 hours in total.
Oh my gosh.
He recalled the band's insistence that everything on Sgt. Pepper's has to be different. We had microphones in the bells and brass of instruments and headphones that turned into microphones attached to violins. We had giant primitive oscillators to vary the speed of instruments and vocals, and we had tapes chopped to pieces and stuck together upside down and the wrong way around. And then A Day in the Life featured a 40-piece orchestra, just casually. They were just like, you know what? Since we're not going anywhere, we can take our time and we can like make something we're actually passionate about, which I thought was super cool. Two Beatles film projects were conceived within the weeks of completing Sgt. Pepper's, a one-hour television film and Yellow Submarine, an animated feature-length film produced by United Artists. So that all happened then. A big thing in their career is they went on a retreat in India and they started something called Apple Corps, and then they recorded the White Album. That's the name of the Wikipedia article. Let's back this up. I don't need to tell you the name of the paragraph in Wikipedia, nerd. Oh my God. So in February 1968, the Beatles traveled to an ashram in India to take part in a 3-month meditation guided course. And their time in India marked one of the band's most prolific periods, yielding numerous songs, including a majority of those on their next album. However, Ringo Starr left after 10 days. He said the food there was not conducive with his stomach. And then Paul McCartney got super bored and left a month in. But for Lennon and Harrison, they were like very creatively fulfilled here and they really liked it. They met an electronics technician called Magic Alex, who suggested to them that the Maharishi, the person, the yogi in charge of this retreat, was actually trying to manipulate them and be kind of a creep. And he also revealed to them that this guy, the person who was running this retreat in India, was making lots of sexual advances towards the women attendees. Lennon abruptly left after figuring this out and hearing about all of this. And then he wrote a scathing song titled Maharishi, but he renamed that song Sexy Sadie to avoid legal issues. So, you know, the song Sexy Sadie was originally Maharishi, about how this guy was a super creep. And then McCartney eventually said, we made a mistake. We thought there was more to him than there was. So they didn't, they eventually said that this guy was a creep and they didn't like him. So yeah, he was a predator. I read that and I was like, oh my God, this song that I like sang as a child is just about like literally a predator.
That is wild. Oh my word.
Literally. And I like knew too that like they had like spent time in India, and like if you listen to like George Harrison's music and like, oh my God, John Lennon's music, they have like lots of, I feel like, Indian influences. Like the sitar is in their music a lot. So it's interesting that they're like their time in India was, they felt really creatively fulfilled there, but also like, you know, was like led by a predator. But they, I dig that they were like, they found that out and they were like, okay, cool, we're leaving. Like,
yeah. Bye.
In May, Lennon and McCartney traveled to New York for the public unveiling of the Beatles' new business venture, Apple Corps. like CORPS as in C-O-R-P-S. It was initially formed several months earlier as a part of a plan to create a tax-effective business structure, but the band then desired to extend the corporation to other pursuits, including record distribution, peace activism, and education. McCartney described Apple as rather like Western communism. The enterprise drained the group financially with a series of unsuccessful projects, handled largely by members of the Beatles' entourage who were given their jobs regardless of talent or experience.
Oui.
Harrison later said, basically, it was chaos. John and Paul got carried away and the idea blew millions and Ringo and I just had to go along with it. So we're seeing, here in these years, especially the cracks in the group, they have so much money. They know that they can like do whatever they want with it. They have so many people that like can spend their money at will. Exactly. They're bigger than Jesus. It's crazy. So from late May to mid-October 1968, the group recorded what became The Beatles, a double LP commonly known as The White Album, for its virtually featureless cover, which I don't think I ever understood that, like, The White Album is not called The White Album officially. Like, it's called The White Album now, but it's called The Beatles? Like, that blew my goddamn mind.
I didn't know that until those words just left your mouth.
During this time, relations between the members grew openly divisive. Starr quit for 2 weeks, leaving his bandmates to record Back in the USSR and Dear Prudence as a trio, with McCartney filling in on the drums. Lennon had lost interest in collaborating with McCartney, whose contribution, Obladi Oblada, he scorned as granny music. Tensions were further aggravated by Lennon's romantic preoccupation with avant-garde artist Yoko Ono, whom he insisted on bringing with him to recording sessions, despite the group's well-established understanding that girlfriends were not allowed in the studio. McCartney had recalled that the album wasn't a pleasant one to make, and he and Lennon identified the sessions as the start of the band's breakup. Describing this album, Lennon later said, "Every track is an individual track. There isn't any Beatles music on it. It's John in the band, Paul in the band, George in the band." The session also produced the Beatles' longest song yet, Hey Jude, released in August as a non-album single with Revolution. All right, so I know I said I wouldn't say what the name of the Wikipedia also, here's us citing our sources. We are reading directly from Wikipedia. We are nothing if not scholars.
No, we've known all of this stuff since birth.
The name of this this bit of the article is called Abbey Road, Let It Be, and Separation. See also Breakup of the Beatles.
Sure.
Okay. Although Let It Be was the Beatles' final album release, it was largely recorded before Abbey Road. The project's impetus came from an idea Martin attributes to McCartney, who suggested they record an album of new material and rehearse it and then perform it live for an audience for the very first time on a record and on film, which is interesting because they had established they are not going to do any more live shows. Lennon described the largely impromptu sessions as hell, the most miserable on earth, and Harrison said the lowest of all time. Irritated by McCartney and Lennon, Harrison walked out for 5 days. Upon returning, he threatened to leave the band unless they abandoned all talk of live performance, period, and insisted they focus on finishing the new album, titled Get Back. As I said before, they're also having financial problems. On the 4th of July, the first solo single by a Beatle was released, Lennon's Give Peace a Chance, credited to the Plastic Ono Band. Literally, we have like Beatles out on their own adventures now.
Nick Jonas projecting.
On the 26th of December, my favorite Beatles album, Abbey Road, was released. It sold 4 million copies within the first 3 months and topped the UK charts for a total of 17 weeks. McCartney was super unhappy with a lot of the producers' approach to a couple of the songs, especially with the lavish orchestrations of The Long and Winding Road, which included a 14-voice choir and a 36-piece instrument. He demanded that alterations to the song were made, and he was ignored. He publicly announced his departure from the band on April 10th, a week before the release of his first self-titled solo album. On the 8th of May, 1970, Let It Be was released. Its accompanying single, The Long and Winding Road, was the Beatles' last. It was released in the U.S., but not the U.K.
Oh.
And listen, Let It Be, people only liked it. And McCartney filed suit for the dissolution. I don't know. He wanted to dissolve the band. Mm-hmm. their contractual partnership on the 31st of December, 1970. Legal disputes continued long after their breakup. And their final breakup was not formalized until the 29th of December, 1974. Sure. When Lennon signed the paperwork terminating their partnership while on vacation with his family at the Walt Disney, the Disney World Resort in Florida.
The death place of the Beatles, Walt Disney World.
All right. That's the Beatles. Honestly, their legacy has continued far past their breakup, but that's the end of the Beatles. Let me tell you about Tina in the Sky with Diamonds, can I?
Yes, please.
So, Tina in the Sky with Diamonds is the second episode of Glee's fifth season and the 90th episode overall. It premiered October 3rd, my new favorite day, 2013. The episode is written and directed by one person named Ian Brennan.
Okay.
So, we've got some special guest stars in this episode. We've got the first appearance of Demi Lovato's character, Danny. Woo! Happy to have you, Demi! So, this episode was mostly filmed in parallel, like in tandem, with the filming for The Quarterback, the next episode, the tribute episode to Corey Monteith, with Demi Lovato's scenes being filmed a little later due to scheduling. This is the third episode where all the members of the New Direction present have a solo. The first is the pilot, and the second is Britney 2.0. The scene starting with Tina, with Tina being crowned prom queen and then having mm-hmm. the bucket of red gook dumped on her is a reference to the movie Carrie and the book Carrie. The story Carrie.
The musical Carrie.
Honestly, the musical too, but it's supposed to be a shot for shot. I've seen the movie Carrie. I've seen both of the movies, the one with Chloe Grace Moretz mm-hmm. and then the one from the 70s. I don't know them well enough to know that they're perfectly.
It's not a perfect shot for shot, but the kaleidoscope thing yeah. and the slow-mo mm-hmm. and her date going, what the hell?
And
yeah, that's all.
Yeah. This is the second prom to have a senior class president as a candidate for prom king. Super duper. This episode had 4.42 million viewers and a 1.6 rating. And those are your GLACs.
Woo! Tina in the Sky with Diamonds. All right.
Interesting they didn't put that song in.
I've been thinking about it, frankly, a weird amount for such a minor detail about this episode. And I do, first of all, I love that song. But I do think, how would they? that song, you can't really make it make sense story-wise because it's so clearly about a drug trip. So I do understand that, they had one spot for a song that didn't make any sense and they chose Sgt. Pepper's over Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, and I respect that decision.
Yeah. I hear that. What songs are in this episode? Let me tell you. We have Get Back, performed by Kurt and Rachel. We have Something, performed by Sam, Jake, and Ryder. We have Here Comes the Sun, performed by Danny and Santana. We have Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, performed by Jake, Marley, Ryder, and Unique. We have Hey Jude, performed by the New Directions as a whole. And we have Let It Be by the New Directions and Kurt and Rachel and Santana. Sorry, I fully forgot that.
Heck yeah, baby.
All those are by the Beatles, in case you didn't know.
What?
All those are by the Beatles, in case you didn't know.
You're lying.
I'm not.
Are you ready for a recap? Don't make it bad.
Take Whoa, an I didn't episode. Know where you were gonna go with that.
And tell us what happened. Here's eight, Mr. Unkley. It's prom again, baby. Tina wants Queen and she's not being nice about it. Trio Bree plans to carry Tina at the prom using slushies in lieu of pig's blood. After the carrying occurs, the Glee kids comfort Tina and convince her to accept the crown and enjoy the rest of the night. Elsewhere, Sam falls for the school nurse, Santana falls for a lesbian co-worker, and Rachel books Fanny and Funny Girl on Broadway. Wow, life imitates art. And that's what you missed on Glee!
I'm so glad you described it as carrying someone and to be carried.
I know, because it's not confusing at all with an actual verb that means to, you know, lift someone up.
I knew what you meant. I knew what you meant. I literally asked Caden right now. I said, how would you feel about being carried? Like, like to be carried. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. He knew what I meant. How would you feel about being carried? Frankly, maybe controversial take. I think I'd hate it.
Yeah. Honestly, hot take. If someone were to carry me, I think it'd be so traumatic that I might accidentally, oops, kill my entire senior class and burn down my school.
Sorry.
Hear me out.
You didn't know I had telekinetic powers.
Another hot take. It's something that no one has ever said. Stephen King is the horror mind of a generation because the satisfaction of seeing this poor girl be so mercilessly bullied and picked on and then see her immediately kill every person that picked on her fills my heart with joy to watch. I see those kids get electrocuted. I see them get smacked in the face with lightning equipment and I say, serves you right. Serves you right. Sue Snell got out of there. She's the only one I care about. Yes, I've seen Carrie.
I had no idea you've seen Carrie.
Once upon a time, Tiffany, friend of the podcast, Tiffany Allen and I, EP Tiff, spent a Halloween sitting in her living room watching a live stream of your roommate and a few of his friends walking through a haunted house while we had Carrie on the TV.
I was a few of those friends. I was there.
Oh, I wasn't sure if you were also there. I couldn't remember. Well, you and your roommate.
I think I was leading the tour, though. I think I was working that haunted house, so that makes sense if I wasn't, like, you know, up in it.
I just remember Caden was very vocal, so I remember his voice. But Tiffany and I were literally having a conversation in the comment section of the live stream while sitting next to each other, but not speaking. Just texting each other over the comments with Carrie playing.
Was it the 1970 version?
Of course. A sissy spade chick all the way. I do want to watch the Chloe Grace Moretz version, but I've only heard like middling things at best, so.
Yeah. And I also, don't even remember it. Like, I saw it when it came out and I was like, meh.
The sissy spade chick wide eyes with like her arms extended and her wrist flexed. You don't get better than that. Come on. Crazy.
No, you don't. You don't. You don't.
You guys, I promise I know it's pronounced SpaceX.
Can you believe she's the mom in Hot Rod with Andy Samberg?
No, I fully forgot that until you mentioned it. That movie is crazy. That movie was the talk of my high school. You could not have a conversation without someone referencing Hot Rod.
Good. I love that movie.
Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Na, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur einen Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
Speaking of carrying people, let's talk about Tina in the Sky with Diamonds.
Hell yeah. What do you want to talk about
first? I like kind of want to talk about Tina first, but we can save the Tina stuff for last. It's the most substantial stuff. What do you think? First or last?
Yeah. Let's talk about it first.
Great.
This is just on our minds.
It's like, it's what I want to talk about, frankly. The Sam stuff and the New York stuff, I can like take or leave. The Tina stuff is this episode to me. All right. A lot going on in this plot line. I want to start out by saying, I have read things on the internet before of people talking about this episode and how they really don't like it because they think it's just like very mean to Tina. They also like don't love the resolution of it. They wish that it was more of like a Tina stands up for herself moment instead of like needing other people to pick her up and all that stuff. So I want to acknowledge that criticism that it is out there and I understand it. Maybe I just love the trope of carrying someone. I like this plot line. I eat it up.
Yeah. To compare it to Carrie, I think ultimately you have this girl who is so alone. Like, alone in her home, alone at school. She has no one. She has to do things by herself, and she, like, it, like, gets bad. And I think something so beautiful about this episode is Tina's not alone. Like, she has got people to lean on. She's got people to help her. I understand people's want for that, but I think it's so beautiful that, like, for Tina to, like, be like, I'm gonna leave. And then for them to be like, or we can clean you up. Like, we can help. Like, you are not alone. You have people who love you. I don't know. I just think that's, like, I love that story. I love the story of, like, leaning on your friends when, like, shit's scary. You know what I mean?
Yes. And I totally agree. Like, the moment when Tina walks in with all the Glee Club around her and then she goes, after she just got freaking slushies dumped on her, everyone laughed at her, and she goes up to the mic and she says, I am Tina Cohn-Chang and I accept your crown, long live prom. That, like, gives me goosebumps. I love that moment. Mm-hmm. And I totally agree, totally. Like, Tina has been on the outskirts of this club for 4 seasons. And so for in her lowest moment, for it to be like, no, she is a part of this family and they do love and care about her and they are going to drop everything to help her out is a very powerful story to me as well. And I like how it resolves personally.
Me too. Especially with, you know, controversial girl Kitty Wilde giving her the dress off her back and then walking back into the gym with, like, her, you know, her workout clothes on. Like, she's wearing leggings and a t-shirt. Like, to me, it just shows, especially when you say, like, she's been on the outskirts of this club for so long, and for them all to, like, show up for her like this, I think is really beautiful. And I don't think there's anything wrong with, you know, getting by with a little help from your friends. You
Amen.
Know what I mean? To use a Beatles phrase.
Shoot, I wish that song was in this episode, but oh well.
I know.
Also, one, I'm always on board for a TV show carrying someone. I think it's always funny. It always works for me.
Also, it is so inspired to do it on Glee, and I'm surprised they haven't done it before for a show that already dumps red sludge on people.
Right? It does feel very, very perfect. And also, I think it's smart in the way that over the last, you know, half a season, Tina has become more unlikable as a character. They have leaned into having her be more self-centered and be meaner. We have discussed it at length. I don't think it's a bad choice personally, but it does make her character more unlikable. And I think that having her be carried is a way to still continue that arc of her character, but then bring back, like, the core of who this girl is and why we love her. That monologue she has when she's in the choir room crying covered in slushies, and she was like, I just wanted to be that girl. Like, I just wanted to be that girl that got to be prom queen, that people liked, who was popular for one night, and I'm never going to be that girl. And it does kind of, it gives us a little peek into her humanity and why she was being so selfish recently and so awful is because she was like, clearly no one's going to treat me like that girl unless I demand it, so I'm going to start demanding it. All this to say, I think it's a smart way to keep that character arc going, keep those character traits going, but then bring more empathy to the character. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I love this plot line.
I do too.
I think especially, like, you know, the climax of Tina being so terrible to her classmates, of her, like, campaigning to be prom queen, And it, like, you know, she wins prom queen and it bites her, like, you know, obviously that's not her fault. But in the storyline, like, narratively, like, all of that kind of biting her in the butt. And then, like, her being brought down so quickly. And then, you know, I don't know, her realizing what's important. I love this plot. I think it's beautiful. And I love a good Carrie moment.
And the other Glee kids, instead of, you know, telling her off and putting her in her place and that's the resolution, it's more like, we know that you got a little too big for your britches, but, like, we still love you and we're still here for you and we're going to help you out.
Yeah. Totally. And Stoner Brett being hit with the bucket. Oh, my
Stoner
God.
Brett.
I laugh every time.
Going, what the hell am I getting hit with a bucket is comedy gold. Something I love about this plot line is at the end when Roz brings Bree into Sue's office to be punished because she knows Bree was behind it, and Roz can't stop talking about how the prank itself was so funny, it was top-notch comedy, but, like, Bree needs to learn that doing hilarious top-notch pranks has consequences.
So funny. Oh my God, that made me laugh.
Okay, let's get into some specifics of this plot line.
Okay.
One. I mean, it doesn't bother me anymore. It's the third time they've done this, but it has to be said. Half the prom court nominees are Glee kids for the third year in a row. However, I will say that they have stopped trying to pretend that the Glee Club are, like, huge losers. They've kind of dropped that recently, so it bothers me less.
Yeah,
but I'm like,
have.
It's three, and
they
even
are certainly not.
Yeah,
keep going.
And they even have Brie make a big deal about it. Like, we haven't had a Cheerio as prom queen in years, so at least they're self aware now that this keeps happening.
Mm. Yeah, like, when you compare it to, like, season one and two, like, they're certainly just not even, like, being bullied in that way at all. Just because, like, Blaine Anderson is cool, period. Like, he's, like, the president of all the clubs. He's very popular, period, mm-hmm. You know?
Well, and at this point, I'm glad they're not pretending. Because that's what would irritate me, is yeah. When they stopped having the kids be uncool, but kept trying to convince us that they were. And I was like, I don't buy it. So I'm glad that this season they've dropped it. And they're like, no, they're kind of normal at school now. Like, some of them are still losers, but being in Glee Club itself is not, you know, a social mark on you.
No.
Also, love neckbrace Cheerio representation. You go, girl. Get that prom queen nomination.
I know, we learned her name.
Jordan Stern. Guessed. Come like, on.
But I liked that Sue called her neckbrace Cheerio. Like, that made me so excited.
And I also liked that Sue referred to the fourth candidate as some other chick.
Yeah, literally. Because that's how, like, literally, I think back to, like, times that we have talked about the prom court, and I have described the other girl as, like, the other chick or the other girl. Like, we don't know their names, and I don't want to know their names. You know what I mean?
An attitude that I'm getting from season five so far, which I've only seen season five one time, is the writers... You know, after they tried to take the show on a more dramatic route in season four and it kind of, like, blew up in their faces, it feels like the writers have, like, stopped caring about grounding the show to the point that they are openly just calling themselves out. That they're like, yeah, some other chick. We know this girl is no one. You don't know who she is.
Yeah, literally.
And then when Bree comes into Sue's office and Sue says, who is this girl? I've literally never seen her before. And Bree goes, you put me on the team. That the writer's just keeping like, yeah, we know. We know Bree didn't exist last season. She exists now. We're going to keep moving on.
Uh-huh,
I do appreciate it. I think it works much better for the show.
That's very funny.
I think it works much better for the show than trying to ground this musical TV show in reality.
Especially, like, five seasons in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm sure at this point they don't know how much longer they want to keep doing the show. And, like, you know, five seasons in, I think it's about time. Like, it's about time they, like, start getting self-aware. And, like, the show is well-established enough. I think they, like, it's funny and it's good and we all kind of get it. So I like that they're doing it now.
Yeah. All right. What are your thoughts? Let's see. What are your thoughts on Revolution? On Tina's Revolution solo?
My thoughts are, I would have loved to see Tina campaign to this song. Like, put up posters, like, 1960s style, like, I want you posters, like, to vote for Tina Cohen Chiang to the song Revolution. That could have been so fun. And I'm sad that we didn't get to see it.
Yeah. I think it is a deep injustice that we never got a full recording of this song. It does not exist anywhere. I think that's insane. I think it's ridiculous. I cannot deny that for me personally. Do I think that, like, it's kind of a slight to Jenna Ushkowitz that they don't let her sing this whole song? Yes. Do I also laugh out loud when Tina gives this big speech about how she wants to be prom queen, start singing,
it is
and
really
then literally
funny.
Three sentences in, the bell rings, and everyone, including the band, gets up and leaves? Yes, it's very funny to me.
No, it is funny. And if they're going to do it to anyone, they have to do it to Tina.
Yeah. My bigger issue is, I think this is comedy gold. It makes me laugh literally every time. However, if they were going to do this to her and cut off this solo, I wish that Hey Jude was a bigger Tina feature. Because she sings some in Hey Jude, but it's mostly Blaine singing, and I get it. Ryan Murphy's in love with Darren Criss's voice, and I understand why he has a great voice. And it also, you know, is a song comforting someone else. So I realized where they were like, Tina's friends will sing this to Tina.
Yeah.
But this is a big Tina plotline, and we don't really get a Tina feature
in it.
Tina in
the sky with diamonds.
Yeah. Her name is in the title of the episode, and she gets, like, four lines in Hey Jude. She gets, like, two lines in Let It Be, and she gets four lines into Revolution and gets cut off. I just wish one of the group numbers was a bigger focal point on her. But alas, that's not what this show is.
No, I agree.
So, oh well.
I agree that it's funny. The Revolution bit is funny, but it's like, if this is going to be Tina in the Sky with Diamonds, she needs to have a solo in the episode. Like, she needs to be at least, like, the main feature in one of the songs.
Yeah, I think either Hey Jude should have been much more heavily Tina, or Let It Be for the McKinley portions, have it be Tina. She starts it out, but then Kitty takes it over, and then the rest of the club just carries the rest of the thing. Have it be a Tina feature, and it would be a great arc of her being like, I just had a huge embarrassing thing happen to me, but you know what? I'm going to move forward. I'm going to, like, let it be, accept whatever comes my way. I'm not going to let it haunt me. It would make a ton of sense for her character, and it would then make Revolution seem less mean and more funny, because it was like, oh, she got to sing later. Dumb. Yeah. Do you have other thoughts about this plotline?
No, I like it.
What are your thoughts on Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band?
Oh my God, could you imagine going to your school prom and then four random kids get up in Sgt. Pepper's uniforms and perform this song? They eat it for sure, but it's still soups weird. You know what I mean?
It made me wonder if the entire prom was just Beatles music. Because, like, hear me out. I love the Beatles. I'd be pissed if that was the case. Mm-hmm. I'd be like, only Beatles songs? It's prom in 2013.
Beatles at my Brundle prom? No thanks.
No thank you. More likely than you think. But
more likely than you think.
This cover rocks. Yeah. They eat it up, as you said. And also, I do appreciate the fact that the writers remember that these are sophomores and should not be attending prom. And so they justify it by having them sing at prom. Speaking of, why is no one in this club a junior in high school?
Great cue.
Everyone is a senior.
Because they didn't think about bringing new people in until this year.
It's
the
so
school year,
weird.
You know, last season.
Yeah. There are no juniors in this club. There are no freshmen in this club. Just sophomores and seniors. Wild. Weird and wild.
My favorite part of this song is Marley Rose dropping it like it's hot. Performing like The Rent is due. Like, she is headbanging. She is, like, going so fucking hard. It is so awesome. She kills it.
I genuinely really, really, really enjoy this number. I think it is crazy fun. I have a wonderful time. My final thought about the Tina plotline is just a Sue joke that I think is funny, which is when she promotes Bree to head cheerio because she says the Glee Club is the best when they have a common enemy. And frankly, once I sang on stage with them in plaid pajamas, and ever since I don't think they found me quite as scary.
So funny. So funny. And also true.
And also, it's these writers, these writers finally learning what Glee needs to be. That they, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. The Glee Club needs to kind of be losers. They need to be losing. And they need to have some authority figure in the school. Yeah, who is against them. Some cool figure, whether it be Sue, whether it be a Cheerio, whoever, who is out to get them. That's when they're at their best.
Or Jesse St. James.
Jesse St. James. Shoot.
Hell yeah. What do you want to talk about next?
I think we should talk about Sam since it's McKinley adjacent.
Hell yeah. All right. First of all, Nurse Penny? Nurse Betty?
Penny.
Nurse
Penny. Penny.
I was like, where do I recognize her? Do you recognize her?
Yeah, but it's definitely not from whatever you're about to say.
Oh, what do you recognize her from?
She plays a pregnant teenager in 30 Rock that Liz tries to adopt the baby of.
Oh, yeah, definitely not what I recognize her from the original Broadway cast of Spring Awakening.
Oh.
She's the one with, I think, with the two like curly pigtails. Like, I think it's Anna who she plays.
Maybe.
She's from the original Broadway cast of Spring Awakening. That's where I recognize her. I'm like, why do I know her?
The Spring Awakening to Glee pipeline.
It's...
at least four of them. At least four of them.
Literally. What the heck?
Crazy. Wait, wasn't Skylar Astin in Spring Awakening?
He was!
Five. At least five of them.
At least five.
Wild.
He was. He had the funny hair buns.
Oh, that's him.
Hair buns. I mean, the hair curls.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Mm-hmm. This plotline, honestly, I have to divorce everything I think about future stuff and just focus on this episode. I like this plotline enough.
Okay.
I think it's fun. I think it's fun to do a little like Sam has a crush on a faculty member. Mostly what I like about this plot line that takes it out of like, okay, I don't care to me liking it is Something, the song. I think that performance of Something is very fun. I love all the boys in the school having a crush on Penny, all of them like faking being sick to go into her office. I love Sam's fantasy of them dancing together on the stage, but I especially love when Nurse Penny is teaching how to give the Heimlich maneuver in health class, asks for a volunteer, Sam volunteers, and in slow motion is singing the song All Love Struck while she gives him the Heimlich maneuver. Mm-hmm. That's very funny. That is very Glee. I love that sequence. What about you? What do you think?
I love Something. I think it's like the perfect amount of cheesy too, where it feels like, I don't know, like a 70s like music video, like him like flying through the hallways in slow motion. Like, so funny. I think it's a sweet song and it's a cute cover and it's hilarious. Like, the amount of cheese there is just great and I love it. I like this plot line. I think it's funny to have like someone like completely incompetent come to like be the school nurse. Like the way she like puts a tourniquet on to like give a vaccine, like what the heck is up with her? Like, I don't know anything about medicine, but I do know that like what she's doing is wrong. It's just funny. And I think she's really cute. And I think this is funny. I do think even if she's like, generously a 19-year-old, I think this relationship is certainly inappropriate.
Yeah, no, the gap between, I don't care if it's a 2-year difference, the gap between high school and college is the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, no.
Her realizing, because she does say, oh, have you been faking getting sick to see me? So she clearly knows that like he has some sort of crush on her. Mm-hmm. She should be distancing herself from him when she realizes that he is fully a student at this high school.
Yeah.
I also, something else I don't like about this plotline is they rag on Tina an unnecessary amount in this plot line. And it's also like,
I know.
If you wanted Tina to go to prom stag so that she could get all the single girls' votes, then why did you do this whole deal about, like, the guys offering to ask her out last episode just to immediately undo it? I imagine it was the idea of, like, let's villainize Tina more where she turns down Sam's prom date. But the way that Sam is so, like, ho-hum about the fact that he has to take Tina to prom and he's all sad about it.
I don't even think she's hot.
Yeah, he keeps talking about how he doesn't find her hot. It's gross. It's also like they literally could have done this exact same plot line without, you know, commenting on Jenna Ushkowitz's looks, frankly. Which would have just been Tina hears that she's nominated for prom queen and then says, like, I'm sorry, Sam, I can't go with you. I have to win prom queen. And then Sam is like, oh, and now I don't have a prom date.
Ask someone else.
Exactly.
Yeah, literally.
And I'm so unlucky in love, and now I don't have a prom date, and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
So that all felt pretty unnecessary.
Yeah. It felt unnecessary, too, in the sense of, like, we're not saying that they're going to prom together as a date. They're going together as friends. Like, mm-hmm. that was established last week. He doesn't need to, like, be upset that he's going with her because she's not hot. In that sense, but he also, like, doesn't need to be this, like, hung up about it. You know what I mean? Like, the way that it's written, he's like, well, she's not even hot. Like, I'm so unlucky in love. It's like, we know you weren't in love. You were taking your friend on a date. Like, that's not, I hate that shit.
It's such an enormous heel turn from last week where he was all in on helping Tina out. And now he's like, oh, why do I have to go with Tina? That it feels not planned out. You know, it feels like they didn't think it through and they were like, oh, well, we want to do this other plotline with Sam. So now we have to make him upset about going with Tina, which is something that happens a lot on this show, is these characters just change their perspectives and opinions about things from episode to episode to fit whatever the writers want to do.
You know, that definitely happens.
Oh, but an exchange in this plotline that is very funny to me is when Sue agrees not to fire Nurse Penny, even though she's incompetent. And she says, I mean, a few days ago, I asked her for some Advil and she accidentally gave me steroids, which means I can stop going to Mark McGuire's house. He always wants to hang out and I just want to get the hell out of his house.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
Do you have
I don't think so. That's how I feel about that.
Dang, we're blasting through this episode.
Hell yeah, you've got places to be in, like, I don't know, like a half hour.
When I was watching it, I was like, I don't know. Frankly, I don't, like, I like this episode. Like, I think it's a pretty good episode, especially for how late we are in the show. I think it's a pretty good episode. But watching it, I was not taking very many notes. I just think it's a pretty, like, decent, by the numbers. It's definitely not prom queen, but it's also not, you know, mash off. Like, I think it's a pretty good episode of Glee.
And I know that's right. I pardon me. I do think I like it. I certainly like it less than Love, Love, Love.
I think I agree
with
that.
But I do like this episode.
Yeah.
I just feel like Love, Love, Love had so many moments where I felt so much about it. And this episode, I like, there's moments I like a lot. And there's moments that I like are like, I hate a lot. But, like, it feels pretty middle of the road to me, which is, like, you know, mostly good.
Yeah, I like that this episode feels like it knows what it is. It feels like it knows what Glee is.
Mm-hmm.
And I like...
Does it know what the Beatles are?
What do you mean?
I know, I'm kidding.
Oh, I was intrigued.
I mean, I feel like this episode was less a Beatles tribute, which isn't a bad thing.
I agree.
But is more just like this episode with Beatles music.
Yes, it feels like, much, you know, more incidental than Love, Love, Love did.
Yeah.
I also like, which this has been going on for since like second half of season four, that our perspective has shifted a lot more to the seniors in the Glee Club, who we have known for a long time, and the newbies are the supporting players, instead of that like weird era at the beginning of season 4 when it was just the Jake and Marley show and we like could not hear a whisper of what Artie and Tina thought about anything.
I know. Which is so interesting. There's only a couple kids in this club. They're, we should be hearing from Tina and Artie. There's no reason. There is no reason we should have episodes on episodes on episodes where we don't hear from characters, let alone like characters who've been a part of the show for seasons and seasons.
At this point, the Glee Club is whittled down to 9 people. They are dropping like flies. Literally.
They cannot even compete.
I kept being like, there has to be someone who's out sick this week, which I mean, yes, Joe and Sugar have, without explanation, left the club. But no, all of our core Glee Club members are here now. There's just so much less of them than there used to be.
Yeah.
It's wild. What was the part? I don't remember. Oh, it was the fact that Tina was literally they had to make Kitty also be nominated for prom queen, even though she's a sophomore, and like make a joke out of it, because there's literally not another senior girl in Glee Club who could be nominated for prom queen against Tina.
There's
just so few of them left.
Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Na, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 € pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
Okay, do we want to talk about the New York stuff next?
Yes. I imagine this plotline has the stuff that really pisses you off.
Well, what gave you that idea? Oh my God.
I don't know. There's nothing that's talked about in this plotline. Every topic they talk about in this plotline is handled with a lot of care, and they don't say anything insulting about any sort of sexuality.
No, not at all. What the fuck? What? So wild.
I don't know. I don't know. The biphobia in this plotline is like...
It was like not only insulting just to watch, it was also insulting to Brittany and insulting to like characters on this show and insulting to like members of a community of people who watch this show. I was like, what the fuck? It's just so like the way that they like the things they say are so wild in this episode and like so dated and stupid, and like I hate when people talk about bisexual people like this, and I just think like God, it just makes me mad. Like I don't know, it's the whole thing, and it's said so casually and so like it's like, oh, Santana's not wrong for feeling this way. She should be feeling this way. This is the first time she's ever dated a lesbian. You know, like there was always a chance that Brittany could have left her for a man. And it's like, what the fuck? Like, Danny can leave you for anyone. It doesn't, like, people, the people you date can leave you, period.
It's so wild, because I totally agree. It's this whole attitude of, like, you know, like Santana says, I have a girlfriend who won't stray for penis. It's this attitude of, like, if she leaves you for the opposite gender, it's, like, more unethical. It's something about, like, a straight up lesbian who's like more quote unquote pure queer than like this person who's trying to have like a foot in both ponds and they're, you know, like an impure queer who can't make up their mind. It's so gross. Danny even says that Santana needs a true sapphic goddess, as if a woman and woman relationship where they're both strictly lesbians has more value than a woman and woman relationship where one of both or both of them is bisexual. I don't know, man. It's wild.
I don't know. It's so wild and it's so casual and it's not like, I don't know. At least like maybe I'm just being overly sensitive, but it doesn't feel like a joke to me. It feels like just like people They're just saying, like, that's just how it is. That's how people feel. And I'm like, oh my God, like, what a terrible thing to show your young audience of, like, namely queer people.
Sue says a lot of jokes that are very off color. And that's a separate conversation about, like, whether those jokes are okay in the show. But the jokes that Sue says, it's always very clear Sue is in the wrong. We are laughing at Sue, not with Sue. The jokes right. about bisexuality, at least to me, are very much framed as like, haha, isn't Danny right? Haha, isn't Santana right. right? Like, it's not a Sue Sylvester situation at all. It's very no. much like they're telling it like it is.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's not very good. And it's also this mentality of a bisexual person is more likely to leave you because, like, the only reason that you'd be interested in more than one gender is because, like, you're inherently more promiscuous.
Exactly. Like, it, like, feeds into, like, the slutty bisexual mm-hmm. narrative. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dumb. Which is just, like, so, so dumb and so stupid. I don't know. It's just, like, so harmful. And, like, especially to, I don't know, like I said before, like, this is, like, our main cast and a huge superstar, Demi fucking Lovato, coming on mm-hmm. this show and being like, we're going to shove this like terrible, harmful shit into your television. I also think Demi Lovato themselves is bisexual. They identify as pansexual. So under the bisexual umbrella, hello.
Come on, let's talk about Demi's character. Let's talk about Danny.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I have much to say about Danny. She's introduced. She's a new love interest. She works at the Spotlight Diner.
She lives like two blocks away.
I know. She's in Midtown. She girls got shmoney or a million roommates.
I know. Shmoney or a million roommates, I'd like to know. Well, on a waitress salary, probably the second one. Sure. I like Danny. I'm excited to see. I've said this before. I haven't rewatched Glee since we started doing the podcast, so I don't remember much of Danny's character, but I'm excited to see how it goes.
Honestly, I said I like this episode, and I stand by it. I do like this episode. I like the Tina plotline, and I like the Sam plotline, most of it. Thinking about this New York stuff, I don't know if I like any of it. I like Here Comes the Sun. I like Here Comes the Sun. You know, I'm interested in this Danny and Santana dynamic. It's just very much hampered by the casual biphobia that is thrown in. But, like, the two of them and the possibility of romance there, that's interesting enough to me. That's kind of it as far as things in the New York plotline that I like. It's very weird. Oh, wait. That's such a lie. Because this New York plotline gives us Yeastestat, which is
Yeastestat.
Absolutely fabulous. Santana getting a commercial for a like medication to prevent yeast infections. Amazing. The line in the commercial, I like yeast in my bagel, but not in my muffin. And then her taking an absolutely enormous open mouth bite out of mm-hmm. the bagel and smiling as she chews mm-hmm. it. Comedy gold. Incredible.
It's so stupid funny. Like her, like just the parody of, you know, especially like medication in general, but especially medication for women, the way like she's like jumping through a field and like it's just so
she's stupid, like has a bubble funny. Wand with her.
I know, the yeast goes scat with Yeastestat. Oh my God, so funny. It's hilarious.
Yeah, Yeastestat's incredible. What dampers Yeastestat for me is Rachel hears that Santana booked this commercial. She is trying so hard to be happy for Santana, but you can tell that it bothers her that Santana has gotten a job before she has. Right. Instead of this being a growing moment for Rachel as a character where she learns that she should be happy for her friend regardless and they're not in competition with each other, instead of that happening, Kurt is like, oh, you're trying to be happy for your friend instead of being mad about this? You've lost your mojo. You should be far more right. selfish than this. Let's get your mojo back. That bothered me a lot. The attitude of, because you're actively trying to be happy for someone else and trying to suppress your jealousy, that means that, like, your passion and fire has gone out.
Mm-hmm.
Unhealthy messaging, Glee. Unhealthy messaging.
Totally. It's like, we know Rachel. She would never be happy for her friend.
Seriously, the Rachel that we know and love would never be happy for another person.
Totally.
It's also, that whole scene with Kurt is just an excuse to do Get Back, which, great song. And honestly, a fun performance. Doing it in the piano lab with, like, pianos moving everywhere is very exciting.
Yeah. I do have a hot take. For a long time, you know me, I love Zach Woodley. I think Zach Woodley is very smart, very talented, and is very good at making people with, like, just regular dance experience look good. He's very good at that.
Mm-hmm.
Something has happened recently in this show where so many of their numbers are just moving platforms, which I do think is, you know, like an event in and of itself and is exciting to behold. But frankly, I'm fucking bored, especially with the Niata stuff. It happened with Pinball Wizard, which that was very fun and exciting. But especially at Niata, so many of their numbers are just, let's stick someone on a platform and then move it around and, like, have, like, 20 people just around pushing shit around. And frankly, I'm just bored. And it happens so often. And, like, it is exciting to behold, but I also am just like, you know.
Honestly, I hear you. I don't remember Get Back much at all. I tuned out both times I watched the episode. I think you're probably onto something. I do think you are correct that Glee's kind of lost its passion for its musical numbers. Like, the choice, this episode's not a great example of the choices in songs, but as a whole, like, the choices in songs have been a lot less inspired. And then, like you said, the choreography and blocking has been a lot less inspired. Kind of feels like they're just cranking them out to sell them.
Yeah, totally.
Instead of putting much thought into them.
Yeah.
And yeah, this number is so, literally Kurt walks in and he's like, hey, you seem kind of sad recently. And she's like, yeah, I'm sad about Fanny. And he's like, well, stop being sad. We're going to get your mojo back. Ba-na-na-na-na-na-na. Immediately into this song. And then it has, like, no further effect on the plot line at all.
Yeah.
Just a real hit and run of a performance.
Yeah. And I like what you say, too. Like, it's just, like, such a weird plot to give her that, like, she is, like, given up on this thing. She can give up on it. That doesn't bother me. But, like, now she, like, gives a shit about her friend's accomplishments. Like, what?
I know. That's, like, a sign of her losing hope.
Which, like, that's funny, but it's not funny. Like, they're not saying it to be funny. It's weird. Like, not funny, haha. Like, funny, weird.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Not funny, haha. Funny, weird, 100%. Yeah. You know what else is not funny, haha, but funny, weird?
What?
Rachel using a physical copy of Backstage magazine in the year of our Lord 2013.
I know.
Girl, get on the internet. People aren't buying
anymore.
I mean,
I wasn't using
anymore.
Backstage in 2013. I did not know about, I don't know if it was a magazine or a newspaper or not.
I mean, that is true in the sense that I was also not using it in 2013, but I used it soon enough after and it was fully online that I feel pretty confidently that most actors just starting out were not getting physical copies. You know, anyone who was living in New York in 2013 who can fill us in, I would love to know.
Yeah.
But it feels very, oh, the writers of this show haven't been struggling actors since the 90s and they don't know how things have shifted in
the internet
era.
Honestly, I wouldn't have passed them. That totally sounds like something they would do. Should we talk about Here Comes the Sun?
Yes. I think it's nice. Cute.
Yeah.
And maybe Miss New York.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say about it. It's nice.
I hear you.
It's lovely. The end.
Yeah, I dig it. That's how we feel about it too. I like, it's sweet, and I think it's nice too. Like, you know, I think it's a good, all of the biphobia aside, like, you know, Santana's just learning, you know, about who she is. It's like a vital part of being like on your own and like dating the people you didn't date in high school and, you know, learning what learning who you, I don't know. So I'm excited for Santana, all the biphobia aside.
Well, and I do like the dynamic of, we've never seen Santana be nervous. We've never seen Santana be the
one
who wasn't wearing the pants in the situation. And I do, the show frames it as, you know, Danny's wearing the pants because Danny is a full sapphic goddess. Yeah. And they like, you know, that's something we've already talked about at length.
Yeah.
I think the same thing could have been communicated as, you know, Danny's been out for a lot longer and just is more comfortable with who she is and has more experience with queer relationships. And so that makes sense. And I think that's what they're going for. They're just going for it in an offensive way. But I do think that's what the idea is. And it is very fun to see Santana be so like nervous, and she doesn't know how to flirt, and she doesn't know if this girl is flirting with her, and she is so uncomfortable about the whole thing. I think that's a really fun dynamic.
I agree. And especially like seeing this girl who like has been the like surest person of herself in the world. Like she is she knows who she is. She like, you know, doesn't apologize for who she is to people. Like seeing her in this new relationship that she's very excited about, like where she is like the less experienced one. Like that's so fun for us to see this new dynamic of her character. I'm excited about it.
And it also gives us nice little Rachel Santana friendship moments, which we don't get very often, of Rachel like trying to play matchmaker and trying to push the two of them together. And all of that is very cute. I don't love that Kurt now also works at the Spotlight Diner.
I know, literally.
That felt like, did you just lose the set of their apartment and so you like need somewhere else for all three of them to be? Especially because he still works at Vogue.com, apparently. I'll believe it when I see it.
So weird.
But you're telling me that this man is fully enrolled at NYADA, taking a full course load, doing an internship at Vogue.com, and then also working at this diner? He's got no time. I'm not saying that people don't do that.
Engaged.
People certainly do, but that's a lot just to get an excuse for him to be in more scenes with Rachel and Santana.
I know.
You're right. And he's engaged. He's planning a wedding on top of it.
He should have just, like, hung out there all the time. Like, I think it would be funny to have, like, just, like, Rachel Green style, friend style. Like, the one person who works there and then everyone else who just, like, kind of loiters.
Yes. You know what I mean? I totally agree. And then they could have him be, like, working on Vogue stuff while he was there. The other reason it pisses me off is it's just cutting off Kurt's independent identity that he was building in New York.
That's such a good thought. Oh my God.
He moved to New York and he had his own job. He was like making his own relationships. He was making friends with one of my coworkers. Have I told you this?
Yeah, you did. On Marco Polo, but not on the pod.
One of my coworkers. Which I still have not brought this up to him because I'm like, it's way too weird of a topic to breach. Fully is one of the people who works at Vogue.com and like has lines and speaks to Chris Colfer. Shocking.
Honestly.
Anyways, but he, you know, he was making his own identity for himself and then suddenly he got into NYADA and now he's, you know, taking classes with Rachel, and then suddenly he now gets a job where Rachel works, and they were like, sorry, Kurt, you actually can't have an independent identity. You have to always be the gay best friend, and that's it. You have to be Rachel's purse that she carries around with her. you can't be your own person.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great thought.
Frustrating. Frustrating.
Super frustrating.
All right. Let's talk about the foreshadowing of Rachel getting Fanny. Foreshadowing to real life.
Oh, yeah.
What are your thoughts? Not necessarily what are your thoughts on that foreshadowing. I just wanted to point it out. What are your thoughts on this plot point?
That Rachel gets Fanny.
And, you know, anything about this plot line.
All right. A, if I got offered a job at my job already and someone just like to make me squirm was like, make me a cake, I would be so angry. I'd be like, maybe this isn't this place at the place I want to work at. Like, please don't make me squirm at work. We talked about before, I think it would have been a richer story if Rachel didn't get Fanny. I don't know. Have we talked about it a lot? I don't remember what's made it on the podcast and what hasn't. But like, this girl who has auditioned for one thing, period, and then made her Broadway debut, but also she's a bad actor in high school and also is just a freshman in college, like getting her first Broadway audition. It just like, A, doesn't make sense at all. And B, does it make sense in the structure of this story? I don't like it. But I don't know. I don't like it. That's all I have to say for now. What do you think?
We are in disagreement in the sense that I love that Carlisle Cullen lives for the drama and that he offers her this job in the most dramatic way possible. I'm all for it. If someone did this to me, I would say that was so exciting. What an emotional roller coaster. I would pee my pants then and there at work. I think it's very exciting. I love a surprise like this. However, I totally agree. Alex did kind of ruin this plot line for me in the sense that we've talked at length about how Rachel shouldn't get Fanny Bryce because, you know, it would be a lot richer for her character. It would lead to much more interesting character arcs. But then at the same time, I do recognize we dedicate half a season to Rachel auditioning for Funny Girl. And then if she doesn't get it and we never hear about it again, that is kind of like, for lack of a less crass term, blueballing us as an audience.
No, totally.
And then Alex comes on the season 4 wrap up and offers up the perfect solution, which is Rachel does not get Fanny Bryce, but she gets the standby. And so then we get the best of both worlds, where we can still have this Funny Girl plot line and we can still move forward with that. But then at the same time, you know, Rachel didn't get the big dream part she wanted. She got something a little less and she has to be humbled a little bit and make peace with that. And I think that would be such a more compelling storyline than Rachel booking her first audition right out of high school. But oh well, it's what they went with.
Yeah.
Also, Rachel getting the offer to be Fanny, being so excited and then saying, I can't wait to take this off, about her work uniform. Girl, you've worked at this diner for what, 7 days? You started working there last week. I know, literally. Week.
And it's also, you look so cute. Those little go-go boots.
And also, those uniforms are so fashion forward. How dare you? But seriously, we're supposed to have this attitude of like, Rachel has paid her dues, you know, she's gone to college, she's working on her degree, she's waited tables, she went to college for 3/4 of a year, and she's waited tables for 1 week. She has not paid her dues.
I know, literally.
She's being handed this on a silver platter on a cake.
That's all that right. Episode. Do you have any more thoughts
so about that? We didn't talk about Let It Be. We didn't talk about Let It Be.
Oh.
Hello.
We didn't talk about Let It Be. First of all, I've got a thought immediately. Who bought these kids that alcohol? They're 19. Who bought that champagne?
We don't know how old Danny is. I don't think Danny is 19.
No, probably not.
So I think Danny might be 21 and she bought it for them.
Probably. Yeah. But also, did you see all of them just like tripping on their skirts? All their girls were like just tripping on their their skirts, poor things.
I did not.
They were poor things. Tina especially. This number is sweet. Their outfits, even though they're tripping on them, are so cute. And I think it's I just think it's very sweet to, like, especially with what you said, like, Tina ending on this number, like, God, like, isn't life so hard? But, like, there will be an answer. Let it be. It's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I dig that. And I think it's a sweet end to these two episodes about the Beatles. I'm into it. I dig it.
I do think that this number would have a lot more emotional weight if Rachel had not gotten Fanny, if she was the standby, because
that's just the truth.
The whole message of this song is, when I'm in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, whispers words of wisdom, let it be. Like, when things aren't going my way, when life did not turn out as I planned, I just gotta let it be and move forward. And Rachel's like, and when all my dreams come true and everything is amazing and life couldn't be any better, let it be. Like, that's so antithetical to what this song is about.
I know.
And it annoys me. Every time it goes back to New York, I'm like, don't show these privileged punks who are just having their dreams handed to them every second of every day.
I know, literally.
They don't know what this song's about. Go back to Tina. Also, something that I find very funny about the song, I wonder if they just didn't want to pay Demi Lovato to sing on more than one song in this episode. Like, they didn't want to, like, pay her the royalties. Because she's in every shot of the New York section of the song, doesn't sing a word, to the point that, like, it's noticeable to me. Because, you know, mm-hmm. they're singing on Here Comes the Sun constantly, and then in this song, mouth completely closed, just, like, happy to be there watching everyone else sing. I wonder if they just did not want to pay the extra money.
Maybe. I totally buy that. Demi Lovato is a big, 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 big star. Honestly, I hadn't even thought about that. That makes a lot of sense. Like, I'm sure, like, in terms of, like, the union of, like, TV and, like, you know, I don't know anything about that, but, like, in equity, like, to sing on stage, you have to, like, do X, Y, and Z. Like, you have to, like, you know, there's certain things. Like, I don't know about TV, though.
Well, but I would imagine they're selling these songs. And so I would imagine that for every song that a guest star is in, they get residuals.
Sure.
Yeah. And so they were like, we don't want to pay Demi Lovato for a song that she's going to sing, what, three lines in?
Yeah.
So keep them to just Here Comes the Song, The Sun, and they'll be mute for this one. Don't have to pay them anything.
Right.
Yeah.
Hey.
My final thought is,
tell me,
at the end of this number, they finish singing the song, and then everyone, they pause, it shows Will, he starts clapping, all the kids start jumping up and down and screaming and celebrating as if they just won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know.
Why? Were they concerned that Will was not going to like it? Was Will like, if I don't like this number, none of you get to leave this auditorium. You have to sleep here tonight. And then he clapped and they were like, oh my gosh, thank goodness we can go home.
Thank God. I miss my family. Honestly, I think it's that. I think we haven't heard from Will Schuster in a minute for a reason, because the man's a tyrant.
Yeah, because he has been cracking down on his efforts. He has been straight up abusing his students, torturing them, keeping them locked in the school. The excitement these kids feel to have finished singing a song for exactly one man and no one else is an excitement that I have been chasing my whole life.
I know. I want to feel it
so
bad.
And I have yet to find it.
I also, like, this song is beautiful. The song is not particularly exciting of a song.
I know.
I'm sure super not an exciting song to sing.
Yeah, it's not like a euphoric song. It's like I feel, like, peaceful. I feel, you know,
like, let it be.
Exactly.
I hold up a peace sign and I go,
just like, you know, it is what it is.
I close my eyes and sway side to side. Yeah.
Not, oh my gosh, my heart's pumping after singing that song. It really got my blood pressure up. Anyway.
I don't know.
That's Tina in the Sky with Diamonds.
Doom, doom, doom.
Best part, worst part.
Boom.
Ian, What was your best part of Tina in the Sky with Diamonds?
My best number is Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Sorry, it
Hell
rocks.
Yeah.
The costumes, impeccable. Marley, like you said,
better be sorry.
Putting her all into it. The singing, wonderful. I'm a big fan. Best part is the shot-for-shot carrying of Tina.
So good.
I love how literal they get with it. I love that they use the same like cheesy 1970s, 80s camera effects. Mm-hmm. I'm way into it. Mm-hmm. What about you? What's your best part?
I think my best number is, I don't know, the numbers are all pretty fun. I think something takes the cake for me. And then I think, along with the carrying of Tina, I think the carrying of Tina back into the gym, back to prom, mm-hmm. like by her friends. Like, I personally...
Not just the carrying of Tina with an IE at the prom, but the carrying of Tina with a Y by her friends.
Like, carrying her heart. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, I just think it's really beautiful. And I think the criticism is valid, but I also, like... I mean, I said this before. I think it's beautiful. I think, like, especially, like, being mercilessly bullied and then realizing that you're not alone is a special kind of experience that I don't wish on anyone. Mm-hmm. But I do hope that, you know, people realize in times of trouble that they've got people by their side. And I think this is a beautiful representation of that. So I think that's my best part. What's your worst part?
I'll leave the biphobia.
Thanks.
Because I feel like that's probably yours.
You know I want it.
And I'll say the like weird, the fact that Rachel's happy for someone else being a sign that something's wrong with her and not a sign that she's, well, the fact that Rachel's trying to be happy for someone else, I should say, because it's clearly hard for her, is a sign that something's wrong and not a sign that, you know, she's learning and growing as a person.
Totally, totally, totally. I love that.
What about you?
I think my worst part is... just getting the biphobia.
Woo!
Granted, I love that there's more lesbian representation on this show. I think that's awesome, and I can't get enough of that. I think that is... a great thing and a thing that I like on this show, but like at the cost of just like putting a whole entire community down and like a large portion of watchers down, just like the things they say aren't funny, they're mean and weird and just super weird, and I don't like it. So that's my worst part.
Yeah.
Well, hell yeah. What song do you want to sing from the back half of the Beatles?
I'm going to do With a Little Help from My Friends, which should have been in this episode. It actually easily could have been put in this episode and worked. They just didn't do it. What about you?
I'm going to sing, Oh, Darling, Please Believe Me, I'll Never Make It Alone, from Abbey Road. Abbey Road is my favorite album by the Beatles, and one of my favorite albums, like, period. Especially like the B-side of Abbey Road is just one long song. It's amazing. But Oh Darling has a special place in my heart, so that's what I'm gonna sing. Hell yeah.
Oh yeah. If you got thoughts on Tina in the Sky with Diamonds, we want to hear them. Send them to recoveringgleek@gmail.com and check in next week for Lena's birthday minisode to hear us share some of your thoughts. If you want to follow us on social media, follow us on TikTok and Instagram @recoveringgleek_podcast and on Twitter @recoveringgleek. And if you want to support our podcast, what? You can do that? You can.
What?
You can do it on patreon.com/recoveringgleek. Subscribe to our Patreon. Here's some of our bonus episodes. Our bonus episode for this month on High School Musical 2 is coming out this Friday. Mm-hmm. We did one on Hairspray last month. We've done a few on Glee fan fiction. You know, we're all over the map.
Yeah.
And also, if you subscribe to be one of our best friends of the podcast, you also get a special little, I don't know if you've heard of it, a thank you shout out at the end of our episodes. So we're going to do that right a beat new.
Okay. I'd like to quickly apologize because I'm choking on my own throat right now, but I will try my best. My goal is to do my best. with the tools I'm given. And the tools I'm given are swollen tonsils. Love you. Here is a special thank you to Salty Boy, Hannah, Eli, Zanspa, Zabana, pardon me, I'm so sorry, Mary, Kay, Atticus, Brittany, Meg, Ava, Carolina, Reagan, Meredith, Colorio, Katie, Alex, Josette, Tori, Emmy, Marcus, Lowe, Ethan, McKenna, Danielle, Brisa, Maggie, Ian, Sutton, Madeline, Tiffany, Alani, Rachel, Elise, Kieran, Diane, Ellarane, Jeanette, Benjamin, Suzanne, Blanton, Lola, Ben, Alice, B, Bamitsham, Caden, Katie, Fanson, Nadia, Savannah, Fadia, Meadow, Nicole, Ali, Joseph, Jackson, Tori, Gally, Caitlin, Patrice, Garbage, Maddie, Abby, Kodiak, Kirsten, Story, Natasha, Liz, Eileen, Mariah, Manuel, Mallory, Sarah, Hannah, Matilda, Rebecca, Libby, Eve, Jordan, Andrew, Elizabeth, Christina, Dell, Ari, Liam, Riley, Juliana, Elijah, Stephanie, Haley, Raphael, Marissa, Rin, Taylor, Kimberly, Carlin, Frankie, Dana, Chase, Finley, Jocelyn, Margaret, Despina, Liz, Josie, Nash, Aaron, Alana, Marin, Han, Phoebe, Kaylee, Caitlin, Megan, Emily, Aria, Jeremy, Beatrice, Emma, Haley, Emily, Anaya, Michelle, Lauren, Audrey, Marcus, Lisa, I am for eyes, Jacqueline, Spencer, Elsie, Troy, Mallory, Meredith, Phoebe, Hannah, Laura, Ray, Emily, Alyssa, Charlie, Lily, Melanie, Yunula, Samantha, Sam, Jennifer, Aubrey, Stephanie, Kat, Kelsey, Haley, Tiffany, Emily, Leah, Kelsey, Isabel, Amira, Thomas, Chucho, Cyrus, Brittany, Victoria, Aaliyah, Naomi, Haley, Robbie, Andy, Kenzie, Rhiannon, Ashley, Roman, Michael, Andre, Katie, Will, Elizabeth, Freddie, Sinead, Emma, Turtle, Allison, period.
Woo! I'm in at 43.
Honestly, not too bad. Under 2 is good for me. Yeah.
Heck yeah. Oh yeah. Well, thank you so much for being our patrons. We love you. We appreciate you. Thank you all for being here, for listening. Check in next week for the mini-sode.
Hell yeah. I'm excited to hear your thoughts on this episode, you guys.
Love you forever. Happy prom. Long live prom.
Yeah, long live prom. Long live prom. Here is a kiss on your forehead from us to you. A prom kiss. Oh my God.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Recovering Gleek. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at recoveringgleek_podcast. If you liked our podcast, be sure to leave a review. And tell your friends, please.
What are your thoughts on Carrie the Musical?
I don't know Carrie the Musical very well. I am pro, I would say, Carrie the Musical. Everything I'm listening to, I'm like into. I've never seen it. Do you hate it?
No. I think Carrie the Musical is a musical that I think it's like 75% really good, but then the 25% that isn't really good isn't okay. It's like dreadfully bad. And so it's always like bumping up against that 25%.
Yeah, I hear you. Doesn't anybody get it right?
Doesn't anybody know that I hear? Have I ever told you I was going to write my capstone paper on Carrie the Musical as well as several other
things? No way.
Until I fully came to my senses and said, I can't write a capstone paper about this. But I had already like gotten pretty deep into the research. And my favorite thing that I learned in my research of Carrie the Musical, there were so many production issues with that show. And so much like production team not communicating clearly with each other. And like, you know, the director blocking a song and then the next day the choreographer blocking the same song in a different way because they weren't speaking to each other, all this stuff. The funniest thing was the director told the costume designer that he wanted the costumes to be like Grease, as in the musical, you know, like teenagers around the 50s. The costume designer heard Grease as in ancient Greece. And put all the kids in togas.
Are you fucking kidding me?
And so people came to see the show and they're doing like the opening number and they're in gym class and they're all in like athletic togas like they're going to the first Olympics in Athens. And everyone was like, what is this show? I think that is the funniest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. I think another issue with that show is you can't do Carrie unless you're going to like really go balls to the wall with the special effects. Like, that's why people are seeing the show.
Totally.
You got to have like set pieces flying, you know? Yes. Like, you got to do crap completely. Like that.
Like, I want to see doors slam. I want to see. Exactly.
So I think it is just like a hard, it's a big ask. Yeah. And the script was not up to snuff and it just kind of tanked.
And that's the thing too, is like, that's like not only like hard to do, it's like huge liability. Like even just like to carry someone and for that to go off without a hitch, like to drop pig's blood on someone's head from above, like, and get it in the right position, period, is probably hard enough, you know?
Mm-hmm. And then when it turns out the person you did it to has telekinetic powers, forget it.
Fuck. I hate when that happens.
My advice for entrepreneurs is definitely to level up with Shopify. The platform is just never a worry. Like, I have so many worries, but the platform is never one. I feel like Shopify really thinks about how they can optimize. It just always feels very ahead of the curve. Everything is just super easy to connect and link. They really know what we need. Time and money that is saved, I can spend on other things and on growth.
Start your free trial at shopify.com.